Everyone, this is Editor Phil hopping in for a quick PSA. November 5th is the American election. Make sure you are registered to vote. Go to vote.org to check your status, register, find your polling place, all of that good stuff. We like to talk about the fascist hellscape that is Helldivers. We don't want to live there. All right, let's win this thing. And on to the Halloween spooktacular. Welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast. My name is Phil.
And I'm Logan.
And today's episode is our Halloween spooktacular. And besides it having the word massacre in it, I don't actually know what today's topic is. So Logan, could you please tell us all about what today's topic is?
Today we are covering the Falador Massacre, which was a bug in RuneScape back in 2006.
Not like a spooky centipede bug?
It has spooky elements. There is no insectoid, though.
Okay. All right. Before we get into that, though, do you have a bright spot for us?
I do. A few days ago, Catherine picked up some cookies, which is always excellent. And these are you familiar with the Loft House style sugar cookie?
No, I don't think
just
so.
Just like your standard sugar cookie with the colored frosting on the top. Sometimes they have sprinkles, frequently floured bottom.
Oh, is this like the canonical grocery store cookie?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So take that cookie and have the Oreo Corporation make that cookie.
Whoa. Okay.
So you have a chocolate cookie base with Oreo frosting on it, with some crumbled Oreos sprinkled on top.
Wow. And
it's pretty canonical bright spot, I'm going to say. They are one of the best kinds of trash cookie, I think.
I didn't realize that Loft House was like a brand of those cookies. I just assumed that every grocery store had the shitty delicious cookies, but this is just like its own thing, huh?
Yeah, that's how I've known them. I think they're kind of like a Kleenex or a Xerox, if you will.
Hmm.
At least in my brain, where the item becomes known by the brand instead of the item itself.
Yeah, a while ago, we somehow managed to make it a new tradition that every time I take my son to the grocery store, which is at least once a week, he has to go to the bakery section and pick out a cookie for me and my wife and himself. And it is now, we've done it enough to where this is part of it. We enter the grocery store and he signs cookie to me as to inform me that, hey, just make sure you didn't forget that we get cookies now when we go to the store.
It's cookie time. Yeah.
Yeah. And every time we bring back the bakery cookies and they're fine. Usually he picks out just like a chocolate chip cookie that half of it is just completely dipped in chocolate. And then he always picks the weird cookies for us. And recently it was snickerdoodles and we were sitting there eating our snickerdoodles in the kitchen. And my wife and I both looked at one another and were like, this is a terrible cookie. And the first thing we thought of that we would like to have are these Loft House cookies, because I also saw those. But I can't in good conscience bring home a dozen cookies because that now we're opening the floodgates of what the boy is allowed to bring home.
Just eat 10 of them on the way back, and then you're really only bringing home 2.
That's true. I should do that. That's a good way to go.
Do you have a bright spot this week?
I have 2 bright spots, and both of them are pretty quick. I finished up Space Marine 2 like 2 hours ago. And that was a real bright spot. That the ending of that game is just, it's just the meme, I think, from Predator, where it's just two beefy arms clasping hands, just bros doing bro stuff. That is that game.
Predator. That's definitely Predator. Dylan, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. It's a, that game is just a real straight down the barrel video ass video game. It is real dumb fun, and I had a blast all the way to the end of it, and it continued to just like do weird 40k things that I'm a big fan of. It was a very exciting conclusion, and I'm waiting for you to get it for like a sale or something, because we need to spend some time doing bro stuff in that game.
I am very much looking forward to playing that once I have the time for it to dominate my entire existence for a week or two.
It will. It's good stuff. You will continue to look up pictures of minis, and then I will buy them, and then you won't have to.
That sounds like the best way for me to get involved in 40K, to be fair.
And my second bright spot is, I think, 2 days ago, and I just found out about it today. Do you know the, I guess, TikTok famous comedy musician Tom Carty?
No.
Okay.
I'm going to stop yet TikTok famous.
Well, so I know him from a D&D actual play where he does, it's an Australian group called Dragon Friends, and they've been doing D&D live for too long, a lot of years. But there are a bunch of D&D, or there are a bunch of Australian comedians who do improv and like stand up, and some of them are on like nightly news shows now. But they started a long time ago just doing live shows because one of them was a DM, and none of them knew how to play, and arguably they still don't. But Tom does their live accompaniment, so that he'll do like live music for their seasons.
That's neat. I think you've mentioned this show to me before.
Probably.
I feel like it's maybe, I maybe have that in Podcast Addict already.
Dragon Friends is a good recommend. You should listen to it. The first episode of that show is them getting a quest at a castle, I think, and one of the guys, in like not completely understanding what the whole premise of it is, just kill a court musician, and the entire thing just devolves into chaos from there. That is Dragon Friends from the beginning. There's great musical episodes because they're all great improv comedians, but Dragon Friends is not my bright spot. I just found out that Tom Carty put out his third album, and it's called The Dance Floor at the End of the Universe, and it is a fantastic comedy album. But the thing that I love about Tom Carty is that somehow he manages to be a comedian where I will just constantly have the beats of his music stuck in my head forever. Like, the biggest earworms of all time are his three albums, and I love all of them. But the brand new one just came out, and there's some good ones on there.
Solid.
Featuring there's a song by that he did with Brian David Gilbert. Do you know BDG?
Yeah, that name is definitely familiar.
I'm sure that he's done things before that, but I know him from Polygon, and then he is very much the American version of a Tom Carty, I guess. Real good stuff. You should listen to it. It's called The Dance Floor at the End of the Universe.
Sounds like a great palate cleanser after the wreck we're about to go on here together.
All right, I am ready. I have buckled my seatbelt in my Herman Miller chair, and I'm ready to go to Falador and perhaps get massacred.
The funny thing about this is we're not even going to start in Falador.
Okay.
Falador Massacre doesn't start in Falador.
Cool.
But before we get into this, a couple things at the top. One slight trigger warning on this episode. Nothing bad actually happens to like any humans in Meat Space, but there are plenty of parallels between this event and real life tragedies. So if that kind of thing gets to you, maybe skip this episode. Point two, this happened a long time ago. 18 years ago, in fact, which, boy, did I feel old once I did the math on that.
Yep.
So things are hazy. This will be lore heavy in every sense of that word. A lot of the information to this is lost to time and memory and forum posts that no longer exist. IRC chats that no longer exist, that kind of thing. So I am piecing together what I can from a number of sources. So don't take this as gospel. We'll leave a YouTube video or two probably in the show notes here that covers it in a little more detail. So that being said, Phil, are you ready to talk about the Falador Massacre?
I'm so excited.
Okay. We're gonna start this with a bit of a dramatization here. We're gonna Tarantino an episode for the first time.
Amazing. I'll take my socks off.
Cast yourself back to 2006. And I want you to imagine you are a young RuneScape player who has heard that something weird is happening in Edgeville.
In Edgeville?
Edgeville. Yeah, it's right at the border of the wilderness.
Okay.
Near Varrock. And I'm going to send you a map a little later once we get into the meat of this thing to help you track where we are. But you know something's going on there. You're hearing rumblings in, I don't know, probably TeamSpeak or an AIM chat, I would guess.
Uh-huh.
So you decide to go check what's going on. You make your way towards Edgeville. You're following a player that you don't know, but they're wearing a green party hat, which is pretty neat. We are already at the point in time where those items are significant and rare. And you're following this individual, and as you approach Edgeville, you hear the crack of an abyssal whip, a sound which should not happen in Edgeville. And you see that man in front of you turn to a pile of bones and a green party hat. Slowly, another individual wearing Aram's robes reaches down, picks up that party hat, and looks right at you.
Do I click him?
So this will... You can't, because you can't do PvP in Edgeville. But weirdly...
Uh-oh.
The man in front of you, named Duriel321, for some reason, can do PvP in Edgeville.
Oh,
and
no.
And has now claimed this green party hat for himself.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Okay, so how do we get here? We're going to wind back a month or two to the launch of the construction skill. So this would have been May 31st, 2006. Construction enters the game. This allows players to build their own houses. Some of the construction abilities have like really great utility. Some of them are just for fun. At this point in RuneScape's history, the game is both the game that it is and also kind of a chat room. This is pre-social media, so it's not uncommon for people to just hang out and talk in RuneScape because you could do it in a browser and maybe your parents don't let you download AIM.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think I gave you a house tour the other day.
Yes. Yeah. You showed me your big old house.
Yeah. So you kind of got like a vibe for what those look like. One thing we haven't talked about with construction is how stupid expensive it is. Just like the real world.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Construction in RuneScape is just a bottomless pit into which you throw money.
Yep.
It is true now. It was even more true then. When construction first launched, a lot of the training materials didn't exist prior to the skill being in the game. So you typically level up by building things in your house using planks. Before construction, the only things that existed were just standard planks made from your normal trees. After construction releases, we get oak planks and teak and mahogany, which require some labor to create in the game. And if you think about it, when that launches, None of those things exist. So the stock in the universe starts at zero.
Yeah.
And we have to build our way up. So your supply starts at zero and your demand starts basically at peak because everybody wants to try to do the new skill right away.
Right.
Additionally, people are always really interested in the race to 99 when a new skill drops. It's the kind of thing where you are checking the high scores and watching people jockey for position, trying to figure out who's going to be at the top of the leaderboard first.
Yeah, that's real. Who can finish the Destiny raid first? Kind of feel.
Exactly. And like training methods are unknown. Like no one has anything figured out. And in 2006, no one like really knew how the game worked anyway. So there's even another like layer of difficulty added there. Also, this is before the Grand Exchange existed.
Right.
So if you needed mahogany planks, you needed to go find a guy who had mahogany planks to buy them. So enter our first player into this narrative. Goes by the name of Cursed You, Y-O-U. They're a young individual. They were a staker, which is how they built all of their money. So doing 1v1s at the dual arena. Basically the only way you could amass the fortune needed to enter into the 99 race. Cursed You is building mostly mahogany tables. They don't really have much of a house built up at all. When you're training the skill, typically you're just building and destroying the same table, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of times, as you might imagine.
Does destroying it yield you some of the component parts to make it?
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
You just need the space.
You're just disappearing planks and nails into the aether in exchange for some XP.
Great. Okay.
You need to remove the table so you can build another table.
Yep.
Because it's all done with hotspots. So there's a table space. You build the table. You right click. You remove the table. You left click. You build another table.
Start over. Okay.
And then you run out of planks. You either go get more planks yourself or you have your NPC butler bring you planks for you. Rinse and repeat for forever. Forever. Getting 99 sucks. We kind of covered like some of the rough math on that with prayer last episode.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the number of planks required to hit a 99. It's stupid.
Yeah, that's no fun.
So Cursed You is in the race to 99. It's looking like they're not going to make it. So they go to their parents and they're like, hey, parents, I would very much like to get this 99 first. Does not seem like it's going to happen. Therefore, you should let me skip school for the next 2 days so I can build these damn tables. And they were like, seems all right. That's a good plan. You go ahead, not go to school, build these damn tables for yourself.
Man, 2006 rocked.
Right. There's evidence that this individual had previously sold a bunch of RuneScape gold for human dollars as like, you know, a 14-year-old.
Uh-huh.
So I could imagine if you have a 14-year-old child who is like making a non-insignificant amount of money in this point-and-click adventure game, you're like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay, sure.
That kid pulls in a couple of G's a year, then you're like, yeah, there's some wiggle room, maybe.
Yeah.
So they start, they skip school, build the tables. Still doesn't look like they're going to make it. So they start buying out as many planks as possible. Again, there's no grand exchange. So the market is very cornerable. So they start buying planks that they don't need just so other people can have the planks. Exactly. Because if you have all the planks, that's going to negate XP for other people.
I mean, it's starting to sound like this kid skipping school is actually not that big of a deal. They already have a robber baron mindset.
Right? Man, old RuneScape was such like the wild west of human behavior. So still doesn't look like they're going to make it enough. So they enlist a friend of theirs to help them build tables in shifts over the weekend So the first person is, you know, the day shift building tables all day. And when they log off to go to bed, the other person wakes up, builds tables throughout the entire evening, overnight, until the first person wakes up again.
My God.
Eventually they close in on 99. They are going to hit it first. They have a substantial lead of over a million XP at this point. And again, okay, 13 million and change to get to 99. So sizable. Over a million leads, pretty good. Yep. You can't have other people in your house as you're building items. So there are a few ways to get construction XP when your house is open to other players. So they set themselves up to the point where they are just below the 99, and they invite their friends over, get that 99, throw a 99 party in their house, which is a pretty common thing to do even now, is to gather people to watch you hit that 99.
Is there like a fun animation or something that happens when you hit 99?
There's extra fireworks that go off around your player. The audio cue is different for 99 compared to the previous 98 level up messages.
Okay.
Or 97. It's notable. And especially being the first to 99.
Yeah, yeah.
Is a big deal. So some time passes. Eventually Curse U decides, let's open the house up to everybody. Because this person's been getting messages constantly of people wanting to come see their house, because most players don't have the time or the gold to get a construction level nearly that high. We're only, I think, a little over a week and a half, maybe, after the introduction of the skill. Less than a week, sorry. So not much time has passed at all. So they open up their house to let other players join it. They're on World 111 in Remington. I'm going to send you a map now, just to give you some geography here, because we're going to move around Gillinor a bit. Open chat. There we go.
I know this episode is about the Falador Massacre, mm-hmm. but there is just a certain amount of general foreboding with the notion of this person opening up their entire house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
to the world. It's a real home invasion horror movie already. All right.
Yeah. And people show up.
I imagine
hundreds of people show up.
Is there limits on how many people can be in your house at a time?
No, not at all. I mean, technically there is a limit of 2,000 players, because that's the number of players. Exactly, that can be on a server. There's not a great way to know how many people were there. In later years, Cursed U estimated it at like 700 or 800 people.
Jeez.
Definitely in the hundreds at a minimum, though. The game, as you can imagine, is not like super planning on having 800 people in a few squares.
No.
When you're planning for at most 2,000 spread across the entire map, putting 800 of them in Remington, inside an instance in Remington, on top of that, causes some weirdness. A little bit more on construction here, since this is about to become relevant. There is a subfloor available to your house. I do not have one of these in mine, therefore you have not seen one yet, but you can build dungeons in your player-owned house, which is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
It plays out like, it's got like some AD&D dungeon crawl vibes, essentially. RuneScape kind of stems from an old project from the creators called Devious Mud. Mud is a multi-user dungeon. It's like a kind of like a text version, like a play-by-post sort of thing almost.
Yeah, okay.
Of a dungeon.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of an outgrowth of that. So you're like
placing traps and large doors that players either have to use strength to wrench open or thieving to pick the lock. And you can put monsters in your basement, and you can put a treasure chest at the end and give out some gold if someone makes it through. It's a whole thing. You don't see a lot of them in game just because the rooms you place in the dungeon count against the total room limit for a house.
So
in a player-owned house, you can only have 34 rooms. And especially back then, the more rooms you had, the slower your house loads. And depending on the layout, the more floors and the shape of the way you place all the rooms can also affect the time to load in. So if someone's trying to build a house to like teleport them around and be really efficient for playing the game, they're typically not going to have a dungeon because it's going to add multiple seconds loading every time you hit the house.
Sure.
And if you do that, you know, 10,000 times, that adds up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so we've got this whole house party thing going on. Hundreds of people are in here. It starts to chug. The game is having a bad time. It is not meant for this. So, cursed you. Not having the best time watching this thing just stutter along, and thinks, oh, I'll just kick everybody out of the house.
Makes
and then
sense.
I'll set it to private. That way only the people on my friends list can get back in, and then I'll just hang out with my buds again, because this is getting a little out of hand.
Yeah.
So that's what he does. Boots everybody, which the host can do. There's a little panel, you click a button in the interface, and it kicks everyone out of the house. And this is where things start to go bad. Once everyone is outside of the Remington House portal, again, you'll see that's the yellow circle in the bottom left corner of the map.
Mm-hmm.
We start to see health bars pop up, which should not be happening. No one should be able to be in combat here. There really shouldn't be. There aren't NPCs in Remington that attack you. And you're definitely not in the wilderness, so players can't attack you.
Except,
boy, it seems like players are attacking people.
Oh, no.
And again, if you take, you know, 300 people, we'll say, and you drop them all on the same, like, 8 to 20 squares, you can't see really what's going on because everyone's stacked on top of each other. You right click on a tile and it'll pop open an interface with, you know, 30, 40 names on it.
Yeah.
Names running off the bottom of the screen because you can't even like really quantify how many people are standing in one space, let alone see what's going on. So at this point, panic starts to set in.
Sure.
Once people start dropping, because again, this is back when death was a big deal. Your stuff fell on the ground and anybody could pick it up. So you are losing items. So there are a few player moderators in attendance at this party. Have we talked about player moderators at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So you have your Jagex employees. They are referred to as Jagex moderators or JMods. And there are also PMods or player moderators. And these are just random players that Jagex has like uplifted to a point where they're kind of halfway in between an employee and just a civilian.
Yeah.
They get a little silver crown next to their name. And they have the ability to mute players. So they can right click on someone, submit a mute, and now that person can't talk out loud anymore.
Okay.
If you can imagine in 2006 getting, you know, a bunch of middle schoolers in a chat room, they're gonna say horrible things.
Yeah, so I mean, it's 2024 and it's not much better. So,
exactly,
makes sense.
Yeah, and you just don't have the number of Jagex employees to walk around hundreds of servers across the entire map to see these things happening in real time.
Sure.
So you uplift some players who can do this. Those players also have access to a special section of the forum where they can file tickets that go to the Jagex community management team. So the player moderators in attendance also start freaking out and basically tell everyone to just run. Like, just run, try to get to a bank, put your stuff in a bank, and get the hell out of here. Because no one knows what's going on. This has never happened. No one knows how to stop it. So it's just chaos. They also start, you know, filing tickets through that forum I mentioned, because boy, do we need help with this situation. Like, this is not a thing that's going to resolve itself. So people are teleporting out. They're scattering. The closest bank is in Falador to the north. That's the light blue circle on your map there. It's not too far away, but it's a bit of a hike.
Yeah.
Probably a minute, maybe, or so of a walk, maybe less.
Okay.
Less if you're running. So pan over to the Jagex office, where these reports start rolling in. It is roughly midnight local time to Jagex when this is happening. There are not a lot of people in the office.
There's, sure.
I think three community management people in the building as they start to see these tickets rolling in. And apparently it wasn't uncommon to get tickets of like, oh, PvP is enabled in this place. Come look, come do, you know, help us out. And none of those ever panned out. So the reports at first get ignored because this is not an uncommon occurrence until they notice like, man, there's a lot of these. There's like a lot of these and all the details are kind of the same.
Yeah.
Like, this is weird. Maybe we go take a look-see. So two JMods log in to World 111, head to Remington, and are immediately greeted by, you know, piles of bones and screaming and loot and just anarchy. And they're like, oh,
this is bad.
This has gone tits up already. Yeah. Yep. Like, this is bad news. So they start trying to ban people. Now, as we mentioned a minute ago, when there's a billion people standing on the same tile, it's really hard to tell who's who and what's going on. So they're having a tough time. It is at this point we are going to split the party here and do this narrative in two parts. We see a group of as the JMods show up and start banning people, they're also, you know, shouting out like, hey, run, bank your items, get out of here. But at the same time, we also have people who are coming to Remington because this is a wild thing that's happening. Like, this is clearly history in the making. I want to go see what's going on.
Yeah, I banked all my shit. I want to go be murdered in Remington just to say that I was there in 2006.
Exactly. You gotta get your I Survived Helm's Deep t-shirt.
Exactly.
So you can tell your kids about it later. So a group of players start fleeing to the north. And this is where we're going to pick up with our friend Duriel 321. Duriel also realizes they can do PvP, but when the JMods show up, they think better of, you know, slapping people around in front of employees because you're going to get caught and banned immediately. So they go stealth mode. They're not fighting anyone. They move with the group fleeing to the north and they head towards Falador East Bank, that blue circle.
Yep.
And there is combat happening the whole way because the people who can do PvP at this point are also following the people fleeing to the bank because those are the people who have the most stuff.
Right.
So we get our way, we make our way to Falador East Bank, and here we see a player who is just slapping people around right towards the bank entrance. And as he gets to the bank entrance, we find yet another player with PvP enabled. RuneScape Go One is this person's name. And they are maybe my favorite person in this story. So, what was the person's name who was doing the combat? Jonah something. Jonah Izzel, I think, is the first one at Falador East Bank doing a murder. And RuneScape Go One steps up, who was already fully decked out in PvP gear, and starts fighting Jonah, the person doing a murder. And RuneScape Go One is shouting out to everyone like, hey, get behind me. I'm gonna go and kill all of the player killers. Like, you stay behind me, and I'm just gonna paladin this up.
Oh, what a hero.
Right? So he slaps Jonah around for a little bit until that guy's got to teleport out because he's about to get killed. So now we have one of the PvP people who is like on the side of good, protecting the innocents, as the rest of the murder crowd is heading this way to do battle.
Yep.
Uriel, also in attendance. You can see him slip into the bank in some of the recorded video from this. And I definitely would recommend you check out the video in the show notes from RS Will I Miss It is their username. They did a full hour-long breakdown of this event, compiled a bunch of footage, very well edited. If this interests you at all, check it out.
I love that there's footage of this event that takes place pre-YouTube.
There is so much footage of this event. I mean, a lot of it's lost now, but there's a lot of unregistered Hypercam 2 footage of this that some of it has hit YouTube. I'm going to send you a link to one of them later. You know, the video's 18 years old now, which is wild.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was like done through like Rapid Share, and I think Mega Upload was maybe around then. So you're doing like whereas download sites to pass these videos along.
Amazing.
So you can, in while Jonah and RuneScape Go 1 are fighting, you can actually see Duriel slip into the bank behind them. Everyone else going into the bank is storing all of their stuff.
Uh-huh. Duriel,
though. Duriel was already geared out in some PvP gear. And they come out in the same gear. And then they immediately go and they make a trade with one of their friends. We don't know exactly what happened here, but the best guess is that Duriel, in preparation for what they're about to do, which will most certainly get them banned, is taking all of their valuable items out of the bank and shuttling them over to a buddy's account because they don't want them to disappear when the ban hammer hits.
Yep. Smart. There's a lot of premeditation going on here.
Yeah, it's a little spooky. And this whole time, Duriel is apparently in a TeamSpeak channel with, like, their PvP clan. So there are multiple people who are conspiring to do ill will via Duriel's powers here.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so at this point, things are starting to calm down. The P-Mods are still out in force, the two of them, trying to get people banned who are doing a murder. Duriel leaves the bank, heads north towards Edgeville. That's the green circle on your map. You can see another good chunk of tiles away.
Yeah, that's a hike.
And it's taking a while for the player moderators to clean up Remington. It's still a bit of a mess. There's a hiccup when you go to ban someone at this point in time. One of the combat mechanics we haven't talked about is the logout timer. So if you are in combat, you cannot log out of the game because they don't want a situation where you're about to die. So you just click log out and then you don't die.
Yep.
That would kind of defeat the purpose of the risk reward of combat.
Makes sense.
So if you're in combat, you can't log out until you've been out of combat for 10 seconds. The way the game was coded at the time, this meant when a JMod went to disconnect somebody, if they were in combat, they were unable to do so because that 10-second timer took precedence over their ability to boot them.
Okay.
So they have to follow the player killers around and try to catch them in between murders to boot them out of the game.
They're just walking along, watching it all happen, waiting for there to be a 10-second break.
Yeah, and there's nothing, like, they can't do anything but type about it.
Brutal.
Right? So that's going down in Remington as Duriel makes their way north to Edgeville. Now, no one in Edgeville knows what's going on. Maybe a few. Duriel seems to be the first player killer there. Starts doing all of the murder. I'll actually send you a screenshot here of Duriel in
in Edgeville. Just whacking a guy in a white party hat.
How you do it, says man, most likely about to be murdered.
Yep, because, again, none of this should be happening at all, even a tiny bit. This is bad news.
So this does actually bring up a question I had. So when people landed in Remington and the health bar started showing up, not everyone can do PvP. Is that true?
In fact, we're going to get into the specifics of it at the end here. We'll go into the speculation of how this bug happened and kind of the technical details behind that. But I will tell you for now that Duriel can attack anybody. And even if he's attacking you, you are unable to attack him back.
Yeah,
unless
this
bug also happened to you while you were at the house party.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah, there's only a handful of people who can do combat at all. Otherwise, it's exclusively unidirectional.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah, real. So that is a massacre, yep. I suppose.
Yep. If you are getting hit by an abyssal whip, you can run away or you can die.
Jesus.
Or you can try to run away and then die. Like, yep. Those are your options. I don't know if we've mentioned it, but the abyssal whip is the spine of an abyssal demon. And that's just neat.
That is neat. Also connects up with our last episode about rune crafting, where we went to the abyss. I assume that
we
those
did go
are
to the abyss. Yeah. So we've got Duriel laying waste to people in Edgeville, and it's at this point that Duriel's buddies in TeamSpeak are like trying to tell other players that they know to come check out what's happening in Edgeville.
Uh-huh.
There's something weird going on in Edgeville. You should come see it. So they are luring other players to the slaughter here in Edgeville.
Yep.
Including our poor man Primo, who was the former Green Party hat haver.
Dang.
Up until this point, Duriel is wearing a Farseer helm, which is a high defense magic helm. So it's got magic attack bonuses and pretty good defensive bonuses. Duriel's also got on Aram's robes. Those are from the Barrows brothers. Aram is the magic wielder of the Barrows brothers.
Yes.
He's got a pizza cape, your fire cape.
Yes.
And an obsidian shield, which has a strength bonus on it. That comes from the Tazar. We talked about them in the fire cape episode.
Yep.
Barrows gloves, pretty standard multi-attack style gloves, and probably climbing boots, I think those are, which are a low-cost boot with a strength bonus. So he's in, like, classic hybrid gear.
Yep.
Where you're wearing mostly magic armor with some strength bonus gear, so you can hit pretty good with the whip and then switch over to magic and cast some freeze spells on people, which makes it harder for them to be able to run away. You freeze them in place and then go whip them down.
Hmm. Okay.
So he kills our friend Primo here from our intro narrative and replaces the Farseer helm with the Green Party hat for the rest of the massacre. And that is the, like, image that people know of Duriel 321 is with the Green Party hat.
Which is hilarious. Christmas crown from one of those Christmas poppers. And also some hardcore gear and a whip.
In blood. Yeah.
Brutal.
Just swinging the spine of an abyssal demon around. Yeah.
Yep.
So, as you can imagine, if you are a person in Edgeville, Edgeville is no longer a chill place to hang.
Yeah.
So those people also start running. And they run south.
No.
Back towards Valador.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
By now, the PMODs have cleared up Remington. Combat has ceased there. Things seem chill. They think they got a handle on it.
Yeah.
They log out.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Okay. How much time has elapsed at this point?
Oh, The whole thing start to finish is over an hour.
Okay, so
closer
that,
to two, I want to say. So probably
that's a long time.
3 minutes, maybe more.
Yeah, that's a long time when 800 plus people are involved, but also still not very long for someone to have like fully premeditated a move to a different town, knowing that they may be able to deal with this. Okay.
Yeah. And we'll get into the specifics in a bit, but if you teleport anywhere or log out, you lose the ability to do the PvP. The box ceases to function if you hit a load screen, for lack of a description. No one knows this at the time.
Yep.
So it is strictly by chance that Duriel does this entire route on foot.
Yep.
So Remington's clear. P-Mods log out. The Edgeville refugees, for lack of a better term, start fleeing south towards Falador with Duriel in pursuit. And there they meet the people who were fleeing north from Remington.
Yeah.
Because you just went through this, the first wave of this. Anyone with authority is gone. And now we have Duriel with no lack of targets available in Falador Square, which is in the northwestern corner. And that's our orange circle.
Yep. Okay. And so right in the north gate there.
Yep. And here is where it goes real bad. And that guy's just walking around, just killing people. Crowds have gathered because, again, this is super interesting because it's not supposed to happen. And the loot that hits the ground is just there for anyone to grab.
Yep.
So...
You've so people are taking people their who... shot.
Mm-hmm.
See if they get you might killed get by Duriel. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he got the green one. He killed at least one person with a white and one person with a yellow that we know for sure. But those were picked up by randos. No idea what happened to those.
So you're telling me that there is a possibility that there is someone out there who has the white hat from the Falador massacre.
Yes. And we're actually going to the green one too. We'll get into that.
Duriel's hat as well. Persists?
Duriel's hat may persist.
Okay.
It may be lost to time as well. It's there's no way to know which green party hat is the green party hat at this point.
But, all right.
So Duriel continues doing a murder. More support tickets start rolling back in into JGAX HQ. One of the mods is like, oh, yikes. This is clearly not finished. Logs back into Falador, sees the pile of bodies about, finds Duriel, goes to kick Duriel. Duriel's in combat.
Of course he is. Surrounded by so many players.
Surrounded by, exactly. The guy has no trouble dodging this 10-second timer. At all. It's just walking around. Some people are asking to be murdered. Some people are very much not asking to be murdered. The J-Mod at this point has no tools to solve this at all. So they just start private messaging them. Like, hey man, could you maybe knock it off and maybe stop doing a murder? Maybe don't. And he was like, actually, I think I'm going to keep doing a murder if you don't mind. Eventually... The crowd runs again and pushes our way back towards Edgeville. And this is where Duriel finally is brought to a halt in between Edgeville and Barbarian Village, which came up in our Runecrafting Crusade episode.
Oh,
that
yes.
That is that Barbarian Village.
Those are the ones left over who just didn't want to do a crusade anymore.
Yeah. And this is where Duriel's crusade ends as well. Falls out of combat. The J-Mod logs him out. And the massacre has come to its conclusion.
Wow.
There is a brief moment in time, though, where Duriel is force logged out, but is not yet banned. Because that's a separate
different thing. Process.
That's a separate, exactly. So quickly logs back in, meets one of his friends from Teamspeak, hands off the green party hat, and moments later is
banned permanently forever.
Logged off forever. Yeah.
Wow. So the hat may still be out there.
The hat is still out there. I'll tip my hand to the end here a bit. Duriel eventually says, "Hey, buddy, I would like to have my green party hat back because that was pretty neat."
Uh-huh.
And that guy has already sold it for a yellow party hat and a Santa hat.
Hell yeah.
Gave the yellow party hat to a different friend and kept the Santa hat for himself.
Nice.
That's so how someone out there bought the murder hat, and we don't know what happened to it after that.
Do you think, maybe that happened pre-Grand Exchange still, like, does that person know that they have the murder hat?
I don't know.
That's like weird, like holding on to Duriel's death mask at this point, you know? They just got it. That's the one.
Yeah. And like the items aren't serialized, so there's no way to know exactly which green party hat is the green party hat. So maybe that person knows, maybe they don't. I mean, they were friends with dirtbags, so it's a decent chance that they also got their account banned aware. At some point.
Yeah.
And like maybe that thing got stranded in someone's bank, or who knows? It could be sitting in a bank somewhere. It could be lost to the digital ether.
So is there any ramifications for Duriel's friends at all?
I don't believe so.
Wow.
Like the ones involved with like the handoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. Not that I've seen anyone claim.
Okay.
So they did ban Cursed You at the time.
Yeah.
The first one. Construction person. Yeah. Just because they didn't know. No one knew how the bug was happening, why it was happening, and if it was repeatable or not. And since all of the like player moderator tickets coming in mentioned that individual's name, they're like, okay, we'll just ban them for tonight and yep. let God sort it out in the morning, basically. Like, just keep nuking everything until this stops, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Curse You was only initially banned. Was their account unlocked, yeah. or are they gone forever?
They were unbanned by one of the Gower brothers, one of the original creators of the game, the next morning. Once okay. they got in and like looked at logs and realized that they weren't involved in the maliciousness of the bug.
Yep.
They were unbanned, and we'll, if we have time at the end or maybe in a mini later, we'll pick up with Cursed You's continued career.
Okay.
After that point. So how did this happen is one of the next big questions.
Uh-huh. I am so curious.
A, how did this happen? B, what are you going to do to fix it?
Yeah.
So people are unhappy because you're not supposed to die there to a player and lose your stuff.
Yep. That's bad. That's
just like a fundamental understanding of the way the world works, that this cannot transpire, and it has. So yep. I want my pointy hat back. I want my little crown back. They looked into the possibility of a rollback. One had never been done before. The infrastructure was not in place. This also took I want to say it was about 2 hours from like start to finish, and then an additional 2 hours before the hot fix got implemented.
Oh, wow.
So you're yeah. looking at a 2 or a 4 hour rollback, if it even could happen, for everybody who was online to then satisfy, I don't know, 2-3 dozen players who lost some stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
And on top of that, all kinds of people are suddenly claiming that they were there and lost things because sure. there's not really a way for Jagex to track it. So maybe I'll say I lost a purple party hat while I was there, which I never owned, and maybe I'll get one at the end of this.
Yeah, shoot your shot.
Yeah. So because of that, the decision was made to just kind of give a, oh, that sucks, better luck next time, is basically the official statement that comes down. that we don't have a way to untie this Gordian knot. So sorry about your hats.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. So no rollback, no returned items. You got a cool story. Tough luck.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not mm-hmm. even like a here's 10,000 gold. Sorry about all of that headache.
Nah. How do you identify anybody? You don't know. Yeah, they don't have the telemetry to know who was where, when, what they lost, if they lost anything. Yeah.
That is a catastrophic bummer, especially for Green Party Hat Guy.
Right? Just gets lured to Edgeville. Hat's gone forever. Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly a number of those humans stopped playing the game forever after that moment, because obviously, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine, so, like, if you're just walking around with all your stuff that you're playing that game, like, I don't know, if I was playing this, I would be the person who shows up in all the best stuff, because I worked really hard to get all the best stuff, and then
exactly
to lose it to Duriel here, and then never be able to get it back, like, that's a log-offable forever offense in my book.
You might have, all your best stuff, you might have had your cash stack with you. Because again, this started with that 99 house party. So, you know, there's going to be other people there. It's like a RuneScape rec night that's happening, basically.
Yeah.
So you're going to show up in your coolest stuff. You know, people are going to be doing screen recordings, and these videos are going to end up on the internet later. So you want to have all your best things with you, because you can't lose them. You're in a safe area.
Yep.
Why would you? Why wouldn't you bring your best stuff?
Yeah, and then on top of that, there's not even a, like, even if you had all of your riches banked, you can't just go to the Grand Exchange to get all your shit back. Like, it's just over. Like, no way. Ugh.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
And I mean, money-making methods were bad back then. I mean, I don't want to know how many hours killing green dragons in the wilderness to buy a dragon chain body. If I would have lost that 3 days later, it would have been, meltdown time, probably, as a middle schooler. So, how did this happen? The short version, we don't really know.
Cool. Spooky.
Yeah, so the long version, there have been thoughts, there has been much speculation, both by Jagex employees and players. So we're going to go through some of the most popular guesses as to what occurred here. And this will also explain, I've said spaghetti code more than once in the past, and I think you'll see some of that come to life while we work backwards to try to figure out how this PvP happened. And I have some guesses I'm going to interweave in as well. So the first suspect was the combat ring. When I showed you my house, there was that one room where you could, hop on a balance beam with some giant Q-tips and do battle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. American Gladiator room.
Exactly. One of the other things you could put there instead of the balance beam is just like a big boxing ring where players can do PvP. So that was kind of the first suspect, was like, oh, maybe anyone who was in the combat ring when they got kicked, maybe they were able to continue doing PvP because they were in a little PvP square before they left. So that was suspect number one.
Okay.
There was a player, like, very shortly after, who made some forum posts that they also had PvP enabled themselves, and they were not in the combat ring when they got kicked. They were in a different location. Same is true of Duriel. Duriel was not in the combat ring. Suspect number two is the Scrying Pool. Scrying Pool is a focus item you can put in a teleportation chamber. It allows you to view locations that you would normally walk through a portal to teleport to. so you can kind of see where you're going to go before you go there. From what I've been able to gather, the way the scrying pool works under the hood is that when you scry a location, it actually does teleport your player to that location, although you are invisible and immobile.
Okay.
So you can pan the camera around, you can see what's happening there in real time, but you can't move.
Sure.
I'm assuming this is the way it works, because in the past, if you scryed a location you had not been to, that would unlock the music track for that location for you, as though you were physically there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So the thought was like, oh, maybe if you're scrying a location in the wilderness when the kick happened, maybe you keep PvP enabled because of that.
Yeah.
Not a bad thought. Option number three, and this is what's in the long documentary as the most likely culprit, and a couple of the Jagex moderators have leaned in this direction as well, is the Greater Magic Cage. Okay, you ready for some nonsense? We're gonna do some technical nonsense here. So the Greater Magic Cage is in the center of the throne room. It has a couple of abilities. If a player pulls a lever in the throne room, a purple cage kind of magic cage appears and traps people inside the cage if you're standing on one of the tiles that it affects.
Okay. Is that
two.
Just like a fun prank?
Yeah.
Or is that part of the dungeon stuff?
So option two, you pull the lever again and it drops them into the dungeon.
Ah, yes. Okay. That's good stuff. Also a fun prank.
The dungeon, it is a great prank. The game's full of that kind of useless shenanigans. It's one of the reasons I love it so much. The dungeon underneath, we mentioned that there's, NPCs down there that the owner can place to guard the chest and traps and whatnot. The owner of the house also has the option to enable PvP in the dungeon. So it's called PvP challenge mode. And if the homeowner has challenge mode enabled, PvP is enabled in the basement. It's a safe death. If you die in the basement, you don't lose any of your stuff. It just kicks you out of the house and you appear in Remington outside the portal. And you can turn around, walk right back to the portal, go right back into the house.
Okay.
It's just meant to be like a fun thing. You can do zero risk combat with your buds.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. The implementation of that is a nightmare.
Of course.
So strap in. This is not, are you familiar with the term fail safe from like an engineering standpoint?
Generally, yes.
If something breaks, you want it to break in a way that nothing worse is going to keep happening.
Right. Yeah.
The same is true of coding. This is not a fail safe scenario that this developer created.
Sure. Doesn't seem like it.
No. And I have guesses. I have watched a lot of YouTube over the last few days trying to piece this together. So the way PvP works in the house from an implementation standpoint is there is a flag that gets enabled that says on each player in the house that says this person is allowed to do PvP combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a Boolean variable, maybe. I don't know. It's like a light switch on and off. If you're in the house, it's on. If you're out of the house, it's off. Now, PvP only works in the basement. So you would think that light switch would only be on in the basement. Untrue. Untrue, my friend. The way they did this is if challenge mode is enabled, PvP is enabled everywhere in the house at all times. But if you're on floor one or two, that option is then hidden. So the light switch is on, but we're going to ignore it if you're on floors one and two.
Huh.
If you're in the basement, it's not hidden.
Yep.
It's just on and there, so you can fight.
Seems bad.
That seems bad. So, I obviously don't know exactly why you would do it like that. My guess is those types of flags can only be changed when the player doesn't have control over their character. Which is why that flag goes away if you teleport or log out or hop worlds.
Sure. And I'm assuming you have to teleport or something to get out of the dungeon anyways. So you close that loop.
You go up and down a ladder. Okay. So what the developer did was basically make a list of the ways a human could leave the house.
Yep.
And then go in there, and each one of those ways, make sure that if that happened, that little light switch disappeared.
Uh-huh. Except they missed one.
Except they missed, yeah, at least one, for sure.
Yeah.
Getting kicked in combination with the greater magic cage.
Yep.
We're still working our way to the end of this thing. So, okay. My guess as to the reason as to why it was implemented this way is something similar happens when you jump over the ditch into the wilderness. Back at this point in time, you would click on the wilderness ditch and your little person would take a step or two back and do a run up and do a big jump over the wilderness ditch. And now you're in the PvP area.
Mm-hmm.
So my assumption is that PvP enabled flag gets attached when you jump over the ditch.
Yeah,
that's my guess. So my further assumption is that the developer of the player owned house went, hey, I can just copy and paste that when the house loads in.
Yeah.
And then hide it on floors 1 and 2 because I don't want it there. And that way I don't need to write logic myself to turn this light switch on. I can just grab it from a place where I know it works. And then I can cover all the edge cases to avoid having to write a whole new methodology.
Yeah. I mean, that tracks. That would make sense. That, I mean, with a similar circumstance, that's also probably how I would do it.
Yeah. And then they adjusted the combat system to then check, hey, is challenge mode enabled? Yes or no? If yes, then this player can attack. A safer way to do that would to also check if maybe the target player also has PvP enabled. Something like that. That wasn't done.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, the way the game engine worked, there really wasn't a great way to tell where the player character existed at that moment in time. So you couldn't really check it against a location like that.
Interesting.
So, yeah, back to the greater magic cage. This is the assumption, is that if you are trapped in the greater magic cage, and an individual pulls the lever to drop you into the basement at the same game tick that the homeowner kicks you out, then we can get some weirdness. We've talked about the tick system a little bit, I think, where yes. The game kind of runs on a 0.6-second clock. It's somewhere between like a rhythm game and a turn-based game, if you want to think about it that way, just on that timer. Occasionally, two players, or a player and NPC, will try to do an action at the same time that conflict with each other. So if I try to close a door, and you try to walk through a door at the exact same time, we need a way to adjudicate whether or not you make it through the door before I close it or not.
Sure.
Because in the game, those two things are happening on that same 0.6-second cycle. So now we're going to talk about the stack. You've played some Magic the Gathering.
Oh, no, not the stack.
The stack. Stacks happen in computer science. They also happen in Magic the Gathering. It's a way to order actions that should be happening simultaneously. So they no longer happen simultaneously. They happen sequentially. The way RuneScape adjudicates this is with a player identification number, PID, PID. Back in the day, your PID number was directly related to how long you had been logged into that game session. So if you had a higher PID, you would take precedence over someone with a lower PID.
Okay.
So the theory is that Duriel is trapped within the greater magic cage, just in the cage on the first floor. A player pulls the lever to send them into the dungeon. At that same game tick, Cursed You kicks everyone out of the house.
Who has now, been Cursed You had playing for days.
Day. Yep. Yep. So they've been on all day. They likely have greater PID relative to whoever pulled that lever. So the thought is that we had some items enter the stack in kind of a reversed way from what would be intended. So normally what we would want to happen is they get dropped into the dungeon and then they get kicked out. But because of the PID mechanic, they both of those things hit the stack at the same time and they resolve. So Duriel gets kicked out of the house by Cursed You, and then they get dropped into the dungeon on the same game tick.
Oh.
That dungeon no longer exists, but all of the checks that happen when you fall into the dungeon still execute. So yeah, that little light switch gets flipped into PvP enabled after they've been kicked out of the house.
Wow. Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just so happened that's all in the same assumption. 0.6 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So very specific set of circumstances that weren't accounted for. And then you end up with a handful of players outside with PvP enabled. But if they teleport, all of those checks happen and that variable gets stripped.
Yep.
If they log out, same thing. Variable gets stripped.
So is there a number of how many people were in that magic cage when it dropped?
No idea.
Wow.
No idea. At least a handful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's what, at least three main characters that we've talked about so far.
That we talked about, plus who knows how many of the P mods took care of in Remington.
Yeah.
We there's less footage available of the early bits of the event.
Makes sense.
The further you go on, the more people are kind of aware and prepared with recording software to get an idea of what's happening.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I mean, and so much of that is there are 700 or 800 people inside my house. So just yep. Law of large numbers, like you're going to get a decent chunk of people who have this yeah. Just based on so there's, many cosmic you know, coincidences.
10 people everywhere. Yeah. Give or take. Like,
Wow.
So
incredible.
Yeah. Bit of aftermath. As we mentioned, no one got their stuff back. People are unhappy. You're getting forum posts, uploads to YouTube, rapid share links start going out. This event becomes initially known as the Doomsday Massacre. And here is reveal number one that I've held from you so far.
This has like real Sherlock Holmes energy, by the way, and I'm here for it.
The murder most foul. So this event, if we're going by Jagex HQ time, took place in the year 2006 on June 6th.
666.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Right.
Halloween hat trick right there.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. So that's reveal number one. So Jagex largely, like, after this happened, kind of washed their hands of the incident and did not want to talk about it because how bad it was.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Not a great look for them at all. So they did not talk about it really at all. It didn't get, like, acknowledged by them or the devs in interviews, anything like that, for quite a while. Much time passes. OSRS comes around. We make it to the year 2016. It has now been 10 years since the Falador massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually threw an anniversary event in the game.
Oh, God.
In both old school RuneScape and in RS3, in standard RuneScape. RS3 had an event where if you were on World 111 in Falador, people would randomly get assigned the role of Duriel and have PvP enabled and be able to attack people. And then after a certain amount of time, a Duriel world boss would spawn and everyone together would fight against Duriel and kill him.
That's fun.
And that cycle would just kind of continue throughout the day, flipping back and forth between phase one and phase two.
That's good.
Yep. And in old school RuneScape, if you went to the world selector, suddenly there was a world 666 available.
All right.
And this was another similar kind of thing where people could go to Falador and engage in PvP combat without any risk to their character. It basically like copies your character into world 666 and nothing that happens there gets uploaded back to the main game. But what they did do in old school RuneScape is write a brand new music track just for World 666. And I'm going to take a second now and play this for you.
Yes,
and I
please.
I want to see if you recognize this at all.
Ooh. What is this?
Just wait for it. You got about 10 seconds.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Wow. So, well done.
That's the second episode that has
metal music from RuneScape in it.
You get Nightwish's Planet Hell in the RuneScape sound font. All of the most famous uploads of the Falador massacre include Planet Hell as the soundtrack.
Like pre this or after this happened?
Pre this. Like the initial ones from 18 years ago. In fact, here is...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the most 2006 of all time music to throw over an MMO clip.
Here's one of the clips in question, still in existence.
The black and white slow zoom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Amazing.
There's the Greater Magic Cage right here in the center.
Yep. Dropped.
Wow. Yeah, you can see it drops them down in here.
And then, yeah,
and this is
then everyone starts dying.
Yep.
Wow.
And if you go to, we just type in Nightwish Planet Hell here, and we go to the official Planet Hell upload, and we go take a look at our comments.
Wow. 06, 06, 2006. Many, never forget.
many of the comments on this video.
Wow.
Are all about RuneScape.
That's incredible. What a good overlap.
Yep. That detail I didn't know until just a few days ago. And I was like, oh, this is.
That's amazing.
I was gonna lose it.
This is going to be real good.
It's a real 2006 moment happening right there.
Yep. So yeah, there's the Falador Massacre.
My God, that delivered in spooky energy more than I had expected.
Oh, I love to hear that.
I cannot believe, like, that it's another one of those things where it's just cosmic circumstance just makes the weirdest, worst possible thing happen. And it is incredible how when these things break, they break in very weird, unexpected ways.
Yeah. And they do so on June 6th of 2006.
Yeah. It sure, you know, put my conspiracy hat on. It sure seems like if you were going to do something like this, you wouldn't do it on Halloween. You would do it on 666.
Yeah.
I wish that there was a commemorative thing that, like, you were able to date your account to that and you'd get your cape or something. Your I survived Hell's Deep t-shirt, but
yep. Alas.
Alas. There's enough video of it that you could find yourself if you wanted to, I suppose.
Oh yeah. And I would definitely recommend scrubbing through some of the footage if you found this episode interesting, because it's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a fun thing that I expect at some point there will be an oral history of, if there already is not.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more infamous events that have ever happened. Duriel 321 as a name and the player model, just that set of gear, are things that you just kind of know as a RuneScape player.
Yeah.
If you remember anyone's name from way back then, it's Zezima, who was like the rank one player, and then right behind that is probably Duriel 321.
Wow. Do we know the identity of Duriel 1 or 321, and are they still out there? Is there Duriel 2?
So there have been a number of impersonators that have popped up throughout the years. That's part of the reason that, like, the research for this is tough, is because it's not always clear if, like, the interview that happened on the tip.it forum a few days after the fact, we don't really know for sure if that was Duriel or not. The account was banned, but at some point the details got leaked.
Oh.
So even being able to try to log into the account is not really any indication of someone being the original account holder. So it's kind of lost to the aether.
Dang.
Cursed U is still about. You can find footage of them from even just a handful of years ago, kind of going back over through some things from their perspective.
Wow. Is Cursed U, like, are they done? Are they all 99s? Have they moved on to building a railroad and owning land across this great nation?
They also got themselves banned.
Not
super long after this for slightly related, slightly unrelated reasons.
Great.
So they were unbanned post Falador Massacre, because that was not their fault. But they did do a lot of account sharing on the way up to Falador Massacre.
Yeah.
And they have ties to gold selling, which is also against the rules. So the scrutiny placed on them because of the Falador Massacre did not help, but they were eventually banned due to non-Falador related reasons, but were still definitely breaking the game rules.
Definitely grifting. Well,
yeah.
Listen, the ban hammer comes for us all, I suppose.
Yep. Let this be a lesson unto you.
Yep. Amazing. All right. Well, that is a fun episode about the Falador Massacre. I am still amazed at where that ended up going. That is very cool that still happens.
Definitely. There was a whole, maybe I'll record a mini at some point about the attempted Facebook game of the Falador Massacre that Jagex hired out a studio to make for them. We'll cover that a different day.
Yeah, we'll have to cover that a different day. What?
I promise this would only be one episode, so
yep.
I can't keep going.
Can't take it back.
We can't split this across outside of Halloween.
Because then it's November and there's not enough Thanksgiving in this one, so we'll just have to end it there. All right. That's awesome. I think that that is an episode. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you like it, tell a friend or rate, review, all of that nonsense. GordonHamburger.com is the site. You can go there, read reviews. I just actually posted a review of Indica, a very, well, it's an interesting game, and I had a lot of fun with it, but it's, you play as a nun in 19th century Russia, so, you know, that's
all the times.
Yeah, not super chill. It's about religion and maybe how the Russian Orthodox Church is bad. It's a good game, and I really like the review that I wrote of it, so if you're interested, go check that out on GordonHamburger.com. Yeah, I think go, that's it. Our
music. Listen to Planet Hell.
Oh yeah,
that
yeah.
That song rips.
Yeah, we'll put all that's on once, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Just go sit down in your chair, turn off all of your social media, and go live like it was 2006. Listen to the entirety of a Nightwish album. It's like Evanescence, but better.
And then move on to our good friend Nick Cahill SoundCloud. And
yeah,
get some more metal that way.
Yeah, I would say most of his stuff is at least somewhat inspired by 2006 Nightwish.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
I have been Phil.
I've been Logan.
And we will be back next week with another Codex entry on something less spooky, but, you know, a little bit ooky, who knows?
All right. Put my telephone away and let's do this.